Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode number 312, recorded Monday, August 28th, 2017. Maria Nagaga. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional? With ZipRecruiter, you can post to 100 plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million people. Try it for free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/triangulation. Welcome to Triangulation. I am Megan Maroney, and today I have the pleasure, the honor, to talk to Maria Nagaga. She is a program manager at Microsoft on the .NET team. She is an engager, an influencer. She teaches new developers about .NET, OSS, and Maria was previously an evangelist, a technical evangelist. She's out in New York, and thank you so much, Maria, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Megan. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, first, let's start about talking about what you do at Microsoft. What's your role right now?
Okay, so right now I am a program manager on the Visual Studio and .NET team, and I'm part of what is called the community team, which is run by my boss, Scott Hanselman. So anyone who's been very in touch with the .NET community, they've probably heard of my boss because he's been running a lot of what we've been doing, the community engagement. So when I joined the team, I was asked to figure out how we can get net new developers excited about using .NET and C# and Visual Studio and what that could mean not only for their success as developers, but their success in their careers. So I think about different toolings that we could build and different opportunities we should look at, and also just engaging new developers every day and figuring out how do they feel about us. And making those into tools.
It's funny that you mentioned Scott. I watched several interviews that you did, and one you were talking about Scott and saying that, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of sense that people know Microsoft, and some people are not fans of Microsoft, but everyone is a fan of Scott Hanselman. and so, you know, they're like, but Scott. And so what is it about him, and what is it about your team that really, are you trying to just reach across, I guess, across the aisles? Is that what you're trying to do, trying to convince people that maybe their opinion of Microsoft is outdated or not exactly accurate?
Yeah, I think what makes our team a little bit different is, yes, we do reach across the aisle. And I think for a long time, because you have to remember where Microsoft started from, we're an enterprise-focused company. And, you know, when we became big, it was before it was GitHub and before those social media and all these different places that developers could reach us. So we were kind of left behind in the game. So we're also rethinking the way our program managers and developers work in general. And that's by engaging more with them, not only in just convincing them, because it's just about convincing, it's about laying out your hand to saying we're available and we're here. So one of the biggest things that we see is that people don't know what's happening on our platform because our platform is gigantic. So they don't even know where to start. So figuring out how to get people excited and getting started on C#, .NET, F#, TypeScript, even the different third-party languages that they would have no idea run on Azure and Visual Studio. Those are the kind of things that we're trying to get people aware of. And hopefully they can go in and become evangelists for us and get excited about the offerings that we all have, as well as give us the feedback to make sure that it's even better for them.
And so would you also describe your job as being someone that's supposed to reach out particularly to millennials?
Yes. My particular job at Microsoft on my team is to reach to millennials. And as a millennial, you can imagine when people say millennial, you kind of cringe because we don't like labels. But yes, it's about reaching out to millennials and figuring out different ways that they work. And also identifying that millennials are learning how to code and develop differently. So when I was talking to my boss, I said, when I learned how to code, you got a book and you sat down and you went through it. I said, no, when I learned how to code, you went on YouTube, you looked for a tutorial and you tried the thing that was as interactive as possible. So having that kind of opinion to kind of bring Microsoft into that space that we haven't really thought about, like how do we think about ease of acquisition for millennials? How do we make sure that we're thinking about workloads that millennial developers are very used to? So a lot of people are building more web pages. How do we make sure that their web experience is also easy and not as jarring as it could have been in the past?
So what? Who are you reaching out to? Like people that already know, people that are already developers, people that like in high school, college. Like what? Where are you reaching out to people?
Oh, so I'm reaching out to them in a number of places. I am targeting the boot camps first to kind of go through and figure out if we had to teach .NET in 6 weeks, what would it look like? And how could we make sure that they are successful with that? And this is cool going through like Code Fellows and Epicodus and Treehouse, for example, all these online providers, and figure out how we can make sure that their learning experiences on our platform make sense. So in the past, it was almost impossible to get a bootcamp or Treehouse or any of those people to think about us because they would lose a demographic of their developers because their developers didn't have Windows. So I remember going to hackathons in the past as an evangelist, and it was like, I'm going to show you how to build a Windows 8 application. And first thing you need to do is go and download Visual Studio, but make sure you have Windows as well. If you don't have Windows, make sure that you have some sort of VM that you can run Windows in. And then 2 days from now, let's get started with your application. And there you're losing so many people. But with, you know, all our tooling becoming more cross-platform with Visual Studio for Mac, Visual Studio Code, as well as .NET actually existing outside of Windows, we're able to have those stories. So I do reach out to boot camps. I also reach out to a lot of professional millennial developers or people who are looking at modern workloads. So someone who might be working in Ruby or JavaScript and is looking at .NET as a backend service to manage some of their more complicated workloads, I actually talk to people like that as well. And that's been a pretty interesting process.
So there's people listening or watching this are all varying levels of technical skill and know-how. But just so we're all on the same page, what's the easiest way you would describe what .NET is?
Oh, yeah, that's so funny that you mentioned that. I was literally on a call this morning on how's the best way for us to describe .NET. So the way to think about .NET is a framework that allows you to build applications in multiple different languages with support of C#, F#. And the way you can think about it, with .NET, you can build multiple different applications such as IoT, games, web applications, Windows desktop, mobile applications that can reach multiple different operating systems, actually platforms. So the way you can think about .NET is it's a framework that enables you to actually reach multiple different app experiences.
So do you speak at universities and colleges about, is that part of the work that you do?
Oh, I not as much as I used to, but when I was an evangelist, I was at a college at least 3 times a week speaking to developers. Some of them had been coding since they were kids. Some of them were brand new developers about building applications on Windows. So I do talk to them. Usually it's a lot of workshops. And I find that if you are working with anyone who's learning how to code for the first time or anyone who's learning a new language, the worst thing you could possibly do is actually bring a PowerPoint slide out and try to explain the history of the language. It's like, okay, why do I need to know this? I think the best thing is to give them that hands-on experience. So I do a lot of workshops with universities, with net new developers, with people who want to learn how to code. So those are different ways I actually reach out to people.
So we have a chat room that's live, and Emily the Strange in the chat room says, the best way to describe .NET is big and scary. What would you say to that?
Oh, I would say big, yes, and scary, because it's so big. I wouldn't say that it is scary because it's just, you don't know where to begin. I would say it's scary because you have so many different options. So for anyone who's learning to build .NET right now, start simple. I would say go with .NET Core. It's really, really new. It's not overwhelming at the moment. So it actually gives you this easy point of entry that you can grow up to the rest of the platform. So if you want to go to .NET Framework, it would be a lot easier. And we've also done things to actually make the .NET experience a little bit easier. So going back to that question, like scary, I would agree. The first time I actually saw a .NET application, it was Hello World console application, and then here's a full MVC application. And you're just like, I have no idea what a model is. I have no idea what a view is. I have no idea what a controller is. And we've actually worked with .NET Core to actually make that a lot simpler. So there's this nicer transition grow up plan. So I can actually do Hello World console, right? Do Hello World in the browser. And then with Razor pages, I can actually just build a page, right? That doesn't have models, that doesn't have controllers. It has that code behind experience where you can actually have your controllers all in one place, in one file. You have everything that you need to actually build a single page, right? So rather than thinking like a full application, sometimes you just might want a page.
So is most of your work done, like I know you have Code Conversations, the video series, is most of your work done online or do you find yourself traveling or are you doing a lot of just reaching out in New York?
So I do a lot of reaching out in New York, first of all, because it's always a home base. And I find that New York does offer me a variety of developers that actually span very different languages. When I talk to my former technical evangelists who are in my old team, they always say that there's always one language that predominates a particular part of the country. And I find in New York and then in the Midwest, you find this mix of different language and no real preferences for the other. So I do a lot of things in New York. Online has been a great, great platform for me because you're able to reach so many people. There's only so much that Maria as a one person can actually scale. Because you're just like, oh, I can't be everywhere all the time. And then I've also started traveling a lot more because the first year of my job was just figuring out how we could exist within North America. And now I can do more traveling on how we can expand our efforts and understand developers in other parts of the world as well. So for the next couple of months, I'm going to be traveling quite a bit, which is exciting because I always get upgraded to first class with Delta now, which I love.
That's a good perk. So what's the hardest thing about your job?
I think the hardest thing about my job, and it also stems from just being an evangelist in the past, is where do people get started with being a Microsoft developer? Because being a Microsoft developer is huge. You're not dealing with just one language or one platform or one experience. You're dealing with multiple experiences. And understanding your customer has been the biggest challenge because no customer is like the other. Every single one of our customers is unique. We have customers who have been working on our platform even before I was born or as old as I was. And then you also have people who are brand new to our platform and have different experiences and different ideas. So actually understanding our customers has been the hardest part of my job. And in addition to that, I think it's also understanding the historical references of the platform as well. Because when I came to .NET, I came to .NET when it was ASP.NET Core. So I understand it from as it is right now. And sometimes when I go and speak to user groups or go and speak to speakers who have been using this platform for several years, they'll make references to things that I've never used or even heard of sometimes.
Well, and I know millennials hate labels, as you said, and you know it's. I hate seeing news stories that are just like the millennials did this. But there's a lot of the characteristics of millennials that are really great. Do you find in your work that there are any characteristics that make millennials more suited to .NET than others?
Oh, absolutely. I would say one of the things that we've learned as a team is from the millennial demographic is a need for concise documentation and also ease of acquisition. And I think that has been a really good stereotype about us where we want it all and we want it now. And that has actually forced a a lot of companies and a lot of platforms, not only Microsoft, to actually think about that experience for their developers. So one of the things that we've been working on is an inline code experience. So what does it feel like to actually write languages in the browser? And does that affect the number of downloads or the number of people who are coming to use your platform? I would say that has been the best bit about working with the millennial demographic and myself is that there's this demand to have good first-class documentation, one that isn't like a book that explains everything that the platform is, but more is that what do I need to be successful and then grow from there?
If the documentation isn't in a book, how are you finding that? Where is it?
It's online, right? So that's a big thing that we need to realize is that there's this huge demand to find this online documentation that is easy to understand. If you compare the two versions of the documentation that we currently have, so I would actually advise people to go and look at MSDN, which is our old documentation, and also go and look at docs.microsoft.com and look at the improvements that we've made in the different types of documentation. So as I was mentioning before, I don't need to know when C# was discovered. I don't need to know why it was built. I just need to know how to use it to build a game, how to use it to do IoT, how to use it to build web pages. I need to have that precise information to actually be successful on the platform. Because we've gone since the dev time iteration is so much faster now, where people had 3 months to do something, people have 3 weeks to do it now. So we have to actually make sure that we do provide documentation that accounts for things like that.
Mm-hmm. And so you spoke at Build this year, at Microsoft Build. What was that experience like?
I don't really remember. I remember preparing for it. And I remember going on stage and getting off stage. And it was the most amazing and exciting experience ever. One, you don't see anyone in the audience, which is great. You're blinded by the light that you don't see anything. But it was an incredibly amazing experience to actually see how far we had actually come, especially in that demo. Because one of the things that we have, you know, there are all these different flavors of .NET. You have .NET Core, you have .NET Framework, you have all these different flavors. And the people who have been on .NET Framework and have been our amazing, wonderful customers for so many years are just like, how do I take advantage of all this really cool stuff that's coming down the pipeline? How do I make my application more modern? And having the opportunity to actually tell that story and be a part of that team on how you can take your existing .NET application. This was a WCF application. Like how do we make it modern with one right click and deploy? And there you have Docker support. And I think that was huge to actually tell that story in that short of a time. And people always look at Build and they're like, oh, of course they speed things up. And I was like, no, actually it takes 5 minutes to actually get your application modernized, your WCF application modernized and up and running on Docker. And I think that's a huge thing. That was an amazing experience. Everyone should do something that frightening in their life.
That's good advice. So if someone wants to be a .NET developer, a Microsoft developer, where do they have to start? I mean, how early do they have to start thinking about this?
A lot of people, so I just like to tell people, I have only been a .NET developer for 2 years. And I don't think someone has to have done it for multiple times of years. You don't have to have this huge amount of knowledge prior to the fact to actually get started with .NET. I think what you need to do, first of all, is just figure out what you want to build. If you're a first-time developer or developer coming from a different language, what would you like to build in a different language? My always fallback is I want to build a web application. So if ever I want to learn a new language, I'm just like, okay, if I wanted to build a simple portfolio application because I have all my artwork over here in the back and I actually wanted to build a gallery, what would it look like in each language? So I say first go to our documentation, which is docs.microsoft.com, and just figure out what you want to build because we actually have it split up. So you want to do a web application, you want to do a console application, you want to do microservices. That's a great way to start. Just doing this one task and going through those tutorials has been a wonderful experience for me. And that's why I always tell people to get started.
Awesome. Well, I want to talk about your background, how you got started, how you got interested in tech. But first, this episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Now, if you're the person that's in charge of hiring for your company, you have one of the most important jobs, and it's never easy. And it's especially more difficult when you're hiring someone to help you and you don't have any time because you're doing their job. ZipRecruiter can easily speed up that process for you. They can post on all different job sites. ZipRecruiter will connect you to the most qualified candidates for any job, including highly sought after tech professionals. With just one click, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites. Their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job, and they do it better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites that you might have heard of, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. Here's a stat that might convince you. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate through the site within just one day. That is fast. You will get the help you need. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Connect with a wide variety of professionals, including IT experts, and take your company to the next level today. More than 300 million applications have been delivered. And if you're currently searching for a job, ZipRecruiter will help you find your future job in any industry. We've all been there. It is not easy. If you want a job in tech, government, business, finance, and so much more, upload your resume and then apply with one click. Take some of the stress out of finding a job and a lot of the stress out of finding someone for your job. Be sure to check out ZipRecruiter's blog for recruiting tips and career advice. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support. I am talking to Maria Nagaga. She is a program manager at Microsoft. And we talked about what she did. And now I want to talk a little bit about how you got there. I know you're Ugandan, but you grew up all over the place. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I'm from Uganda, and I grew up in London and Geneva. And before I actually switched to tech, I was actually a history major. And I worked as I worked in the Red Cross, which was really interesting. And while I was there, I actually started teaching people how to use computers. And based on that, I made the decision to actually go back to school and get a CS degree, where I went to Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia, Canada. And I got a degree in computer science and biomedical engineering.
So where were you teaching computers, and what aspect of computers were you teaching people?
Oh, so I was actually teaching computers at the Refugee Law Project in Uganda. My sister was like, "You're not really doing anything. Come in and teach some people computers." And I actually started by teaching people Access, which was something I had never, like, who uses Access anymore? But it was my first intro to actually writing lines of code, because I was writing queries and I didn't know what I was writing. I was like, but this just looks like a sentence, right? And as a person who's dyslexic, I was like, this looks like a sentence that makes absolute sense to me. It was a brilliant, brilliant experience. And I just loved doing it so much. And my mom was like, well, you're not really doing anything with your current career. Would you consider going back to school? And I was like, I would. So I actually went back to school and did a computer science degree. And that was where I got my love for teaching, was from that experience, and also just teaching a skill that you know someone can go and use immediately and maybe even create a job for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about, and you hear a lot in the news, about how difficult it is for people to get into a job where they don't see people that look like them in that job. Can you talk about whether or not that was an issue for you at all?
That was an issue for me, especially when I was in school. Like, when I went to the university that I went to, I believe I was the first Black girl to actually graduate from computer science and engineering. And I was the only girl in my class, and I was the only person of color in the undergraduate department. And that was that was a huge thing for me because, you know, I come from Uganda where, you know, you have a lot of people who look like you. And then you go to another place where nobody looks like you. And that was a bit of a challenge because there is this thrive to always be the best, because if you're not the best, you feel like you've not only failed yourself, but you failed every other person of color who will come after you and how people will perceive you. And, you know, when I graduated college, I was really lucky, like throughout my internships, that's when I was exposed to more people of color and more women in the field. So my very first boss ever, when I was an intern at BlackBerry, and this was way before the iPhone, so it was an incredibly cool internship. When I was an intern at BlackBerry, it was Linda Chalansuk, and she was a woman, and she was also Vietnamese. So I had actually had a mentor who was a person of color and was an engineer and had given me that guidance. And meeting her gave me the drive to continue to pursue being technical in my career. Because there were times when I was like, maybe I should go to business school, maybe I should transition into another field. You know, CS majors can get into any field. But meeting her, and then I had other women that I met at other internships that really encouraged me to go forward. When it comes to applying for a job, I was fortunate where I think because I had internships, it gave me a competitive angle to actually get ahead. But people say, why did you pick Microsoft of all the places that you interviewed at? And I was like, the reason I picked Microsoft when I interviewed is, one, you do like 6 interviews. It's crazy. It's like a whole day of just interviewing. You're just like, you're completely drained at the end. But it was 6 interviews, and the way they pick interviewers at Microsoft, it's random. It's whoever is available. So it's not like they plan and they say, we have a person coming in that meets this demographic, we're going to make sure that we're going to get all these people. But of the 6 interviews, 4 of them were women. And that, for me, was a huge thing. That, for me, showed me that this was a company I wanted to be at. Like, but it was a company that I wanted to be at because it was people of different backgrounds. Some of them were self-taught developers. Some of them had been in the industry for a number of years. People from all over the world. I met people from Guam during the interview. I met people from India. I met people from the United States. It was a huge, thing for me. And I will always appreciate that experience and how that molded my hope in the field.
And does that feeling go away, or do you still feel the feeling you talked about a couple minutes ago about feeling the weight on your shoulders of just not representing you as a person, but all Black people by your work?
The weight, like, I do feel the weight, but I feel the weight less, if that makes sense. I feel the weight in a sense of I want to encourage more women and people of color to apply and not hesitate to apply to a company like Microsoft or any of the other big tech companies, because I think there is this fear of, oh, I won't get in because I'm watching these tech conferences or I'm watching TV and I don't see anyone like me. I think having more people on stage who are public facing, who are doing the work, not that you're just plucking anyone from anywhere and saying, we're going to take you on stage, let's represent, but everyone who was on stage at Build actually is doing and building the products that they were on stage representing. So I feel the weight of like having to reach out to people more and making sure that they are aware of the opportunities. But within the company, I don't feel the weight of I'm carrying every single Black person who's at my, no. But within the community, I do feel that I need to be representative enough and public facing enough so that anyone will look at me and say, you know what? I want to apply to not only Microsoft, but any of the big ones because I can make it.
And so you mentioned mentors. You mentioned one of your mentors. You've written a piece on your website about mentors. Do you have other mentors? And do you have mentees at this point?
Yeah, I do have a lot of mentees and I do have a lot of mentors. And the way I think of mentors is kind of really interesting, where people say, do you have a set of mentors that you work with? I was like, no, but you'll meet all these advocates that you encounter in your life who actually share and motivate you. People who will encourage you to be more adventurous. So I find that my boss, I'm very fortunate that I work, Scott Hanselman is a great boss. And he's also a really good mentor who is your cheerleader and your listener, your biggest critic, and also your advocate. I remember going to him and saying, one day I would like to be your boss. And he was like, okay, let's make it happen. He wasn't worried by it. He wasn't discouraging. And I think that's also a really good sign that you're in a right team, is that if you have a manager who your success is their success. And that's a huge thing. I do have a lot of mentees, but I prefer to tell them I'm just more of your advisor. Like, I want you to come and talk to me and I will be your listener. And one of the biggest advices I give people is when you first join a company and or a team, don't set out to prove yourself first. Like, a lot of people are going like, oh, I need to prove myself. No, take the moment. Like, you're given this 3 months grace period to learn the job. Take those 3 months to listen and learn. And then when in those 3 months, then contribute, then be vocal, because those will be very, very useful, because sometimes you might not understand the context of what's happening. So I always give that advice to my mentees, because they're always coming in right out of college. Everyone has been working for a number of years, or they're coming in from a brand new industry, like they're self-taught developers. And it's like, I need to prove myself. I was like, no, you got the job. You already proved yourself. Yeah, you got the job. You already proved yourself. And like, these interviews are not easy. They're incredibly hard. So you already proved yourself. Take the time to actually understand the role and contribute. And also, don't be afraid to have those conversations of, where's my career going? Like, a lot of people, especially I find a lot of women might be hesitant to have those active conversations with their bosses, with their peers, about what they expect in their career growth. Anyone who knows me knows I have no fear whatsoever in talking about what my career aspirations are and making sure that what I'm doing now is actually working towards that. My boss is always being questioned, like, how am I doing? Is this good work? Give me real feedback. How's it going? Like, I want you to tell me if it's bad. I want you to tell me if it's great. I actually prefer it when people tell me, I didn't quite like that, because then I know there's an area to improve. If people are always saying, they're probably not really listening to what you're saying.
Well, I know Microsoft has a very specific structure for feedback. And, you know, it's probably has to do a lot with the success of the company, because that's important. And a lot of places don't. So what advice would you give to a young developer or any age developer working in some place that wasn't as organized, that didn't have a structured place for feedback, or didn't have any kind of mentor program or anything like that? What advice would you give to people?
I've actually given this advice in the past, because I do have friends who work for startups that are just beginning to figure out what they are, or even companies that grew a little bit faster than they ever expected. And they're like, what does this mean for my career? And I always tell them, structured feedback, in that case, you actually have to come up with a list of things that you want to discuss with your manager every single week. And actually get that feedback from them. And with your peers, that's also a very important thing, because people only think about the people who are above you and above your boss and above their boss and like going up, but you don't really think about your peers and how they are very beneficial to your success as well as you are beneficial to their success. I think the best way, I actually have weekly calls, not weekly, actually, every other day, my team and I, my peers and I, actually sit down and have a call and give each other feedback on what we're doing and on our products. And this is not written down. This is not structured in any way, but this is a great way for your peers to actually understand what you're doing and to make sure that you're all on the same page. When you're in a structured environment, as you are in Microsoft, that just naturally happens, because you have your metrics and your scorecard and your deliverables and your roadmaps. When you're in a less structured environment where you're probably working, maybe you're in consulting or you're in an advertising agency where you actually have to meet a customer's deadlines by a certain amount of time, being able to talk to your peers regularly is important. Also, try to avoid just doing a Skype call where you're not seeing people's faces. I'm a remote worker. I barely go into the office, which is which is I barely go into the office. But one of the things I make sure is that when I talk to people, I see your face, you see my face, and we're already establishing a connection.
That's so important. And so what do you think, what about the hard conversations? Like the conversation, you know, before, the feeling like you have the weight on your shoulders. Obviously, like I'm thinking of the memo at Google a couple of weeks ago that went out, you know, sort of implying, not a lot of people talk about what I took away from that was just a lot of women just reading that, getting that forced into their email and seeing that and just being alone at your desk and just feeling like, oh, like really? Like this is just sent to everyone that like I'm not a competent engineer just because I'm a woman. What about those conversations? Are they conversations that you can have with your team at Microsoft?
Absolutely. We do have those conversations. And I think we've established it within my team to actually be comfortable having conversations like that. I'll give an example. Recently, someone tweeted out how she was being constantly attacked on Twitter by her male counterparts in the same language. I can't remember what language it was. And it somehow, this entire thread, we shared it on our team. And we're like, what do you think about that? Well, some people's opinion was like, oh, maybe I would just cancel myself out of social media so I wouldn't have to deal with that. And I felt comfortable enough actually telling my team, but if you did that, you're giving in to all these bullies. And as a person who's done this in the past, like I actually used to get really horrible comments on my blog post. And I actually stopped blogging. And I've regretted doing that. What I should have done was continued blogging and continued being vocal about these negative comments that were coming in. You don't have to tweet people's names and say, oh, so-and-so did this, but also showing people that you're not alone in this space is also very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've written...
Go ahead.
Well, you've written also about industry isolation. Like, is that something... Like, what advice do you have about that?
So, the industry isolation one. Yes, that was an interesting one. The biggest advice I would have about that is actually finding your peers who might be having the same experience outside of the company. You don't actually have to be in the same company to deal with situations like that. And I should probably explain what industry isolation is. Because industry isolation doesn't necessarily only mean being a woman in tech or a person of color in tech. It could also be a person with disability who is in this industry, a person who is a remote worker, while their entire team actually is based in one location. How do you deal with that? And in that case of that conversation that we had around industry isolation, was realizing that, one, making sure that you have a group of friends who you can easily talk to within the same field that you can reach out to. And the big question is there, how do I find this group of friends? Where are all these magical people who look like me? So for us, it was like we have a women in tech chat, which is on Google, which has all these women in different industries right across the country. It's also joining groups like Women Who Code. It's reaching out when you see another person at the company. Don't be shy to go up to them and say, hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm reaching out and actually like reaching across the aisle and saying, hello, how are you? We should know each other. One of the best experiences I had at that at Microsoft is I was in Redmond. And I was just walking around the cafeteria, minding my own business as I usually do. And somebody came up to me and said, hi, what team are you on? And I was like, this is strange. And I was like, oh, I'm on the Visual Studio.net team. This person was like, oh, I'm on the Azure team. And then he went on to invite other engineers and other women and other people of color and other people who might have felt a little bit isolated to this lunch. And then it ended up being this monthly lunch where these people come together. I can't attend because obviously I'm remote, but I always get the emails afterwards. But they come together and the lunch has grown from 4 to I think about 20 people now. But it's just making sure that you're reaching out to people constantly and having a space where you're encouraged to have conversations about promotions and growth within the company, because a lot of people might not feel comfortable sharing that with their other counterparts on their team.
Well, I want to talk about your role as an evangelist, your previous role, and what that was like and what you learned from that. But first, I want to take a second to thank our sponsor of this show. Triangulation is sponsored by FreshBooks. Now, if you are an independent worker and you like doing work, but you don't like doing the work of gathering the money and chasing people for invoices and all of that stuff because it takes away from the work that you plan to do when you went out on your own in the first place, you might want to try FreshBooks. FreshBooks has an all new version of their cloud accounting software that will make running your business easy, fast, and secure. The FreshBooks dashboard gives you quick access to your spending, outstanding balances, total profit, and accounting reports like sales tax summary and profit and loss. There are time tracking features that make it easy to bill for time by client and by specific projects. Just press play to track your time to the minute. When it comes time to create an invoice, you'll know what you did and when you did it. It's easy to just put that stuff up on the cloud and not have to think about it. You can now assign services to projects and designate different rates for each service so you can bill more accurately for your time. You can send professional-looking invoices online and get paid an average of 11 days faster. And with FreshBooks payments, your customer can pay straight from their invoice. You can see what invoices have been sent, viewed, and paid. You can brand and set recurring invoices, send automatic payment reminders, or set automatic late fees. Stay connected to your clients and keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks app. Snap a photo of your receipt or connect your bank account, credit card, or whatever way you're paying to automatically import expenses daily. FreshBooks integrates with all types of other services like Stripe, Shopify, Gusto, Acuity Scheduling, and more. FreshBooks is adding new features and improvements to their platform on a weekly basis. You can now reward prompt clients and encourage customer loyalty by adding discounts to recurring templates. You can also open any invoice in a new browser tab window so you can work across several invoices simultaneously. It's no wonder that FreshBooks was included in Forbes' Small Giants list for 2017. You can try it free right now for 30 days. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/triangulation and enter triangulation in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Triangulation. And I am talking to Maria Nagaga. She is a program manager at Microsoft. But previously, you were an evangelist. It seems like you're some kind of evangelist now. But what? How was your job previously different from what you do now?
So my previous job was focused on every single thing, developer platform that Microsoft built. And I absolutely loved that experience. When I first came out of college and someone said, do you want to be, I remember interviewing for a PM job and they're like, you have so much passion, you should try evangelism. And I interviewed for the team and I was like, this is exciting. I think it gives me a chance to actually properly understand how consumers use our developer goods every single day. So evangelism in my past life was all about everything. So I had to understand how every single language, how every single developer experience would be on the Microsoft platform. So one day I would be talking about games. The next day I could be talking about IoT. The next day I could be talking about web, microservices. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. So there wasn't really a opportunity to grow within one language, but I had the opportunity to grow within all languages.
So are you now fluent in all of those programming languages?
No. I would say fluent. I would say I do know there's some languages I will always just know, like Python and Java because of school. And now C# and .NET become like a natural thing for me. And I think if you know one language, you can pretty much figure your way around all languages. So the interpretive languages will always have one style. The compiled languages will always have another style. So as you get more confident as a developer, and I'm still like so young in my career when I compare myself to other people, because I've only been at Microsoft for 5 years. And I talk to people who have been here for like 20 years or have been in the industry in general for 30 years. I've been told as time goes on, all languages will look the same to me.
And do you think, I mean, when you talk to people who've been at Microsoft for 20 years or been, you know, in the business for 30 years, like, is it markedly different? Like, what's different about it right now?
I think when I actually talked to someone who had been at Microsoft for, not Microsoft, but had been in the industry for 30 years, and I was just like, one, I'm so excited to know you. She's a woman. And I was like, this is amazing. And she said the biggest differences that she has encountered is the way people actually consume information. She said that's been the hugest change for her. She said when she first joined, as I said, book, type, compile, yay, we're happy. As when I joined, it was all these different things coming at you. She said we have a lot more time now to actually, a lot more opportunity now to actually know more stuff. In her day, you were strictly a Delphi. You had specific languages that you supported. Right now, she said, you're seeing so many developers who have this breadth of different languages. So a front-end developer is still a developer. You have HTML, JavaScript, CSS. You have full-stack developers who cover a multitude of languages. You have mobile developers. She said, the identity of what a developer is so different from the way she was, because she said there was one type of engineer in the past. And now they're just so many different kinds of engineers. And I still don't even know what kind of engineer I identify as.
Yeah, I mean, you were the evangelist for everything.
For everything. I have no idea. Like, people are like, are you web? Are you mobile? Are you microservices? I say, I'm .NET everything. I'm still .NET everything. But I do think about what my main focus right now is, think about the acquisition process. How do I make sure that people are easily getting excited, easily finding, easily downloading, easily using C#, .NET, and all the managed languages that Microsoft offers.
And Microsoft is obviously moving more towards open source than they ever have before. I know you're a storyteller. What's the story around that?
So around moving to open source, why we did it?
Yeah.
Okay. I personally, there are all these different theories. First of all, the truth is that it was time for us to actually get more cross-platform. So let's think about the terms of just like .NET development. Before .NET, with the exception of Mono, for example, the Mono implementation, .NET was strictly a Windows platform. It was strictly Windows development. And about 20 years ago, where Windows dominated everything, it was absolutely fine. You could be happy .NET and you could reach all these different developers. But then the landscape changed, right? We had the whole iOS development spring up. There were different platforms that you could build on. There were different devices that entered the market at different price units. So Android, for example, introduced mobile development to all sorts of people because now you're reaching more mobile phones. So I think when you think about people moving open source, one, it allows us to reach so many different developers and lets our thought bubble to become even bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. One of the reasons Microsoft.NET got faster, ASP.NET Core got faster, was from Ben Adams, who isn't a Microsoft developer. He is in England or Wales, I can't remember, but he's in the UK, and he wanted the servers to go faster, Kestrel to be faster for what he was doing, and he was able to bring it to 1.5 million or 1.1 million requests per second. We would have never been able to reach that without the work that he had done. We would have reached it, but he enabled us to reach that faster. That's the beauty of being an open source platform. The beauty of being cross-platform is now we're able to reach more developers. We're able to give developers more experiences that work for them. So now if you want to open up a .NET shop, you're not only restricted to having Windows machines. You can have any machine that you want, and it will, any operating system you want, and it will work. And I think that's a huge thing. We're going from this many people to these many people, and hopefully as many people as we would like. And don't even get me started on Azure, because now with Azure, we can reach everybody. It almost sounds like I'm in a marketing campaign, but like I truly, truly, I'm very excited about what we're doing on our developer stack. I am incredibly excited. And if you have me back on the show in September, or afterwards, I'll be able to showcase some of the secret stuff that we've been working on that enables people to do a lot more interesting stuff with .NET.
Oh, I would love to. Okay, so I know your future is going to be, you're going to be Scott Hanselman's boss. How is that going to happen? How are you going to do that?
Good question. We need to figure that out. I think the path to success is different. I always tell people, people are like, oh, like sometimes a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, is like, oh, are you CEO yet? And I was like, first of all, I need to figure out how I'm going to get there. I think the way you truly get to places higher up, like get to leadership, and every single good leader I've met so far at Microsoft has got there, one, by managing their people well and being very focused on the success of their people. Two, building truly engaging products. And three, building products that scale and are actually used. And the way you build those products is actually by understanding the customer. So right now, since I'm spending a lot of time understanding the millennial customer and hopefully a whole bunch of the solutions I'm creating not only help the millennial developer, but help all developers, I think I will eventually become Hanselman's boss.
And when are you going to start blogging again?
When am I going to start blogging again? Good question. This almost sounds like a one-on-one with Scott.
He didn't tell me to ask that.
He didn't tell you? Okay, I'm totally surprised because it's our number one thing. It's like, when are you going to start blogging again? I think as soon as the release of my first product, because I'm actually releasing a first product, it's going to be my first time to release a product at Microsoft. Once that's done, I am going to start blogging a lot more. I promise. I've told a lot of people that. And I'm also going to start podcasting a lot more as well.
Okay, good. Well, we look forward to it. So for now, where should we tell people to follow your work? Is it best to follow you on Twitter, Medium, at LadyNagaga.com? Where's the best place to follow you?
So the best place to follow me right now is on the Twitters. So at LadyNagaga is always the best way to reach out to me. And for any other information, like you want to see about what we're doing. Oh, it's so funny. Like there's a Game of Thrones tweet right out there.
That was a good one too. That's how a lot of people felt, I think.
Everyone felt that way. Now people are going to tweet me, spoilers, Maria. The best place to reach me is definitely Twitter. And the next thing of just how to get involved and stay in touch with what we are doing is dot.net. That is dot.net. That's a great place, a landing place. And how do I get excited and engaged about everything that my team is focusing on, and how to get started with .net in general. So that's a great place to be. And any feedback you have on that product or that page, we'd love to hear it.
And then your code conversations, would you consider that podcasting? Or when you're talking about podcasting, it's going to be something separate?
So the code conversations is something that I do with John Galloway. It happens once a week. So that's a great place. That is a form of podcasting, and we're going to have a lot of interviews there. We're also going to have a whole bunch of MBAs. That's more educational. But in terms of actually podcasting, I am going to continue doing a podcast that I started 2 years ago called The Fearless Inventor, which is about people who are going above and beyond to create experiences or just not being scared to try something new.
Well, I can't wait for that. That sounds like right up your alley. So thank you so much, Maria Nagaga, program manager at Microsoft, a fearless inventor herself, an evangelist, and great on Twitter. So follow her at Lady Nagaga. If you're listening to this, it's Lady N-A-G-G-A. A-G-A, like Nag Gaga, like Lady Gaga. Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Megan. It was amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care.
All right. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you for listening to this hour with Maria Nagaga. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you have suggestions for anyone that you think you'd like to listen to for an hour, talk about what they're doing in tech, you can always email me at megan@twit.tv or find me on Twitter at Megan Maroney. Triangulation records every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific, and it is hosted by myself and Leo Laporte and Padre and Jason Howell, and I love doing it, so I hope you will subscribe to that at twit.tv/ try. And you can be the first to get all of our conversations that we have with our favorite tech people. And thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.